This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, and welcome into episode 196 of Half Measures. As always, I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Dan Wineking. Kia ora, Dan.
Kia ora, Paul. I hope you had a great Christmas.
I certainly did. You asked me before, what did I get in the Christmas stocking? And everything I expected came to fruition. Yourself?
Just a lump of coal for me.
Deserved.
So I'm going to have to try harder, I think, this year. But we'll see how it goes.
This is our biggest podcast event of the year, Dan, and as is now tradition, our top 10 TV shows of the year get split across two podcasts. So today we'll be picking 10 till 6. Next week, the final five. Are you feeling confident about your list?
I am feeling confident, and this is my favourite podcast of the year. I've been talking about this with a few people all week. I've been saying to them, I'm going to be doing my top 10 soon, getting them hyped up. They've been asking me for spoilers. I'm like, you're going to have to listen to the pod. You know, I'm not going to just start dropping names here. I'm looking forward to getting into it. Hopefully less controversies than the previous 2022/23 list, but we'll see how we go.
I feel like if a show is on the list, whether it ranks 10 or 1, it probably doesn't actually matter that much. I think if we talk about a show over these two podcasts, the clear message is you need to give the show a go.
I think you're right. Like there's when I look at my list, there's very little, particularly in the 1 to 5 category. You know, you could almost put them in any order and I could make an argument for why it's the best. And I think too, you've always got to remember like a top 10 list is someone's personal, individual view of, you know, TV. I think, you know, our only requirement for these lists is the show has to have aired in 2023. Look, I'm just as interested in what your list is, and I'm just as interested what our listeners' lists are. So as we're giving you our list, I would love to hear yours, because this is where, like, you and I have both, even from each other, found some really great shows to watch. That The Lazarus Project is a great example. Like,
correct.
Fantastic
correct.
Show.
Yeah.
And you brought it in as a top 10. And
Welcome to Wrexham last year as well.
Correct. Correct. Another one. So it's it's just, I don't know, there's just something special about the top 10. Is it the festive kind of spirit? Is it just sort of a celebration of the great things that we've had to watch? I know we've had some, you know, you and I have talked throughout the year that is there going to be enough good content to sort of like build a strong top 10?
That's right.
And, you know, still, I actually think I've had to make some hard cuts on this list.
Yeah, I'm the same. I remember halfway through the year saying something like, oh, I've got plenty of room on my list. You know, I was like, what's going on? But it soon filled up the last 3 months in particular. What I love is that we don't share our lists, as you said. So I have the fun of hearing your list and seeing how many I was able to guess that you had in your list. And I am expecting that there could be one or two returning favorites. However, there most certainly will have to be a lot of new shows in here. So for example, for me, I was looking at my list. Last year I had Responder season 1, Andor season 1, Severance season 1, The Rehearsal season 1, Capture season 2. None of these shows have returned with a new series. Better Call Saul, final series. For All Mankind has only just dropped a few episodes, and so I haven't had the chance to see that. Obi-Wan was a miniseries. So that's 8 shows from my list last year that simply cannot appear this year. So that's quite cool that there'll be a lot of new things appearing in my list at least.
I'm just looking back at my list as well. It's kind of interesting to reflect on your list, isn't it? Like, it's, you know, what has come back, what hasn't come back. It's going to be good. I can't wait to get into it. And plus we've got some honorable mentions. So we have a classic. We'll give 2 honorable mentions before each of our lists as well, just to kind of warm you up into some things that haven't quite made the top 10, but still a very good show from our individual point of views.
Exactly right. And each time we have a show that potentially I think it might happen where we have it on one of our lists. We'll review it at that point when it comes up, and then we won't reveal where it appears in the other person's list until we get there.
Okay.
Is that correct? Very is that the good. Rules? Very is that good. The rules?
Yeah, that's the rules. Like, I think
you're all about business rules, Dan. I know that.
You know, if we were going to be talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and hypothetically it might be number 10 on my list and it might be number 5 on your list, so I'll start talking about it first. You'll say that you've also got it, but you won't reveal when until we get up to that point.
Those are the rules.
It's pretty straightforward. And I was thinking before when you said we don't reveal to each other what, you know, what our top 10s are, we don't even reveal to each other what we've been watching each week when we do the podcast. Like, it generally, like, apart from joint watches, it generally is a surprise.
I have often thought, I wonder if we should tell each other so that at least I can go away and have a look at what you've been watching. But I also love the surprise.
I agree. Like, I often think to myself, maybe we should start some type of like run sheet. So at least, because it would kind of help with like getting the, you know, all the socials and the website stuff ready. And it would just be probably a little bit more organized. But at the same time, I always kind of just appreciate the look on your face when I'm like, oh, I've just watched this. And you're like, you know, like, it's take away the magic.
Run sheet makes me think of a workshop as well, Dan. And I don't know if I can handle that on the podcast.
It'll become billable, and no one wants that.
No one wants that at all. Let's go in, Dan. Let's start this 2023 top 10 TV shows of the year with your first honourable mention, Dan.
I feel like I need a drum roll. I feel like I've kind of got like butterflies in my stomach. But my first honourable mention for 2023 is... And it's strange that it's in the honourable mention category for me, but this is The Mandalorian Season 3. So normally this is a show that's featured a bit higher for me in my list, so it's sort of a little bit unusual to have it as an honourable mention. To be fair, this did stream at the start of, you know, sort of as a March 23, so it's quite a while ago, so the memory is a little probably kind of dusty, but... I'm a fan of The Mandalorian. I don't know whether season 3 kind of like hooked me as much as maybe some of the other seasons. And obviously there was a bit of a shift in storytelling. We've had a lot of good Star Wars content across other shows. This season in particular, I thought had some strong episodes, and it had some slightly sort of weaker episodes. But it's still an enjoyable show, and a show that I always look forward to. I feel like... And I don't know whether this is, I think it's because the magic of The Mandalorian has gone for me a little bit, just in the sense that, you know, Pedro Pascal, obviously the voice of The Mandalorian, but he isn't in the suit. And like, it just became such a big deal this year. And I feel like I'm kind of being like sold, not the real thing. But I, as a massive fan of the Clone Wars and Rebels and everything Star Wars, as everyone knows, great to get some more stories about Bo-Katan with Katie Sackhoff. Great to kind of just see the sort of expanded Star Wars universe continue. I like the sort of direction where it's probably all heading under Dave Filoni. It's I had a lot of fun with it, but it didn't quite make the top 10.
I love that this is in your list. Everything's proceeding as I've foreseen, because this isn't in my list, but it was just sitting on the outside of my honourable mentions, and I thought, oh, hopefully Dan brings it in so we do get to talk about it, because everything you just said, I can ditto pretty much. There was a lot of things there that, which is, because you and I had this at number sort of 2 or 3 one year, as I recall, maybe 2019, it may even be number 1, I don't. So it is a reflection of where it is, but there were some standout episodes in that season that really, really, I thought were absolutely fantastic Star Wars, like right up there with some of the best of Star Wars, like the one where the doctor, the one who used to, the one who used
the
to experiment
doctor.
On Grogu,
yep.
Yeah, he was rehabilitating, and then they went on board the old Star Destroyer. That's the stuff of dreams. I absolutely love that. And then the one with Moff Gideon returning and all the Shadow Council stuff and the Hidden Empire base, you know, it was some really great lore. So there was just some really good episodes. I remember we had the Jack Black and Lizzo conversation, and you know, some of those episodes, what's going on here, some of the writing here and there wasn't quite what we wanted, but I do think that if you're watching a Mandalorian rewatch, and maybe it's like seasons 1 to 4, 1 to 5, who knows what they're doing, I think it will play out better as part of a rewatch than as a weekly watch.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, one of the things I really enjoy, and, you know, like you and I love to theorize about, you know, where these episodes are going, who we're going to get in. And I think, you know, like there's some special moments in this season, like with Ahmed Best coming back to, he was playing Cullen Beck, obviously the actor who played Jar Jar Binks, and just some really great, like kind of fan service moments, some great moments of sort of going deep into Star Wars lore. I think the challenge for me with The Mandalorian Season 3 is after watching a show like Andor, which is kind of, you know, tonally very different and a bit more of a consistent storyline, The Mandalorian feels a bit up and down in terms of who they're aiming it towards audience-wise. Like, you know, when you think about the Jack Black episode, it's very kind of family-friendly isn't the right word, but it's a bit more kind of It feels like it's trying to hit a different audience, whereas, you know, then you kind of jump into episodes like the Chapter 23, The Spies, or Chapter 24, The Return, and, you know, all of a sudden it's getting a little bit darker. We're losing some of our main characters. I still had a lot of fun, and I completely agree with what you're saying. I think eventually when we kind of sit down and watch The Mandalorian as a complete series, I'm expecting to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And I just remember there was a lot of New Republic stuff in there as well, which of course is something we never had across the movies because they never really had that, because we ended with The Empire and Return of the Jedi, and then we jumped straight into the First Order with Force Awakens. And so there was that whole bit in between. So learning about the New Republic and the struggles of taking over from this empire was very, very interesting. Anything to do with Grogu, we're always interested. And then all of those little remnants of the empire were just... Yeah, just I loved all that Shadow Council stuff, and anything that came around pointing towards the First Order of Return, loved that as well. So, yeah, great, strong kickoff, Dan.
Yeah, that's me with my first honourable mention. Paul, what is your first honourable mention for your top 10?
First honourable mention for me, Dan, is actually a show we both watched. This was a show that was not for you, but it was one that I... obviously rated enough to have it as an honorable mention. That's season one of The Night Agent. So AKA Kind Eyes, as I recall the episode you named it. So that this was earlier in the year. And I think you mentioned just before Christmas that it was Netflix had it as like their most watched show of the year. So obviously it got a lot of attention. I found it a really just top draw action thriller. Like, I think I love the fact that it was centered in on this low level guy. You know, he was the dude that would sit in the basement of the White House manning this phone that would never ring until, of course, the night that it does. And then he just goes on this adventure. And I was really surprised how much I got into it. It's one of those ones that I looked at the poster and the genre, and I was just really taken by the idea of it. And the guy in the lead, Gabriel Basso, I think is how you pronounce it. I haven't really seen him before. I remember he was a kid in Super 8, but I haven't seen him since. I thought he was just great. I thought it was a real good breakout role. And I think that's where the Kind Eyes came from. I just thought he was really believable, really easy to sort of empathize with, really a really good protagonist of the story. And I enjoyed it a lot. And I can't wait for season two.
It's funny because I'm looking back at the IMDb page now, and a lot of these episodes rate really highly. Like they're actually in the, you know, a lot of them in the eights. Just about every episode's rated as a top episode. One of my favourite things about The Night Agent was actually the bad guys who were kind of like putting up Chase in the first couple of episodes. And it kind of had such a dark undertone. I don't know why this show didn't resonate for me as much, because it's got all the elements of things that I really like. I love a good sort of crime thriller. I love, you know, sort of FBI, police, murder mystery type things. But for some reason it didn't. But I looking back on it, even looking at the pictures now, if I hadn't seen it, I would be thinking, oh, but the show's totally for me. It's showing all the things that are of interest to me.
Yeah, but it's always interesting sort of if you were to look back on a show later and reevaluate or rewatch it, how you might feel about it. But for me, I just feel like, so this is the only title in my top 10 that is defined as like an out and out action thriller show. And I think that's a really big genre. And so I think I would say if that's your kind of genre, if that's the kind of genre you go for, then I would say look no further. I just found the relationship between him in the lead and Lucianne Buchanan in the role of Rose. I thought she was so good. Shout out to her, born here in Aotearoa. She was strong too. The two of them together just had this great bond. And it was, I think, if they miscast either of those two, this may not have worked, but I just found it a entertaining, tense, you know, bit of White House politics, bit of Homeland, bit of Jack Ryan. There's a real Bodyguard type feel to it as well. But no, that's my first honourable mention. And that's available on Netflix, obviously.
I would imagine you'll be joined by a lot of people. So yeah, this had, I think, was it 800 million minutes of sort of viewing time? So
it's outrageous, eh?
That's huge. So there's obviously a lot of fans. And you can see why a show like this is obviously getting a season two. It'll be interesting to see what they do story-wise. But yeah, it looks like it has been a hit for Netflix. Good shout.
Hmm. What's next for you, Dan?
Well, speaking of a show you just mentioned, actually, is Jack Ryan season 4. So I don't know if this is a show on your list at all before I get into it.
No, it was another close one. This is playing out perfectly.
Yeah, so look, and it's interesting that I put Jack Ryan on my list because I feel like I've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with the Jack Ryan series over the last couple of seasons. In the sense that I've kind of felt like pacing wise it would be a bit up and down. It was, you know, sometimes part political thriller, then sometimes Jack Ryan sort of like a sort of super agent, or is he a business analyst, or is he, you know, what is his skill set? It seems to be a lot of things. I felt like season 4, you know, really kind of put a bow on things. I really appreciated, I remember saying this at the time of the review, only 6 episodes long. I felt like it really kind of like it forced him to tell a tighter story. Mm-hmm. I felt like they kind of really pushed Jack to the limits of kind of his skills and capabilities. They really kind of pushed him more, I think, into being a bit more of a, like, dare I say, not Jack Reacher, but like more of a, what's Kiefer Sutherland 24? Jack something, it's completely escaping my mind.
I
can't believe
that.
It, a favourite show. But yeah, I just, pacing, storytelling, fantastic support cast. Like, I really enjoy all of the people that Jack Ryan kind of partners up with, from, you know, Wendell Pierce, Michael Pena, Michael Kelly. Just, I think they've got a really good sort of like sense of like humor throughout the show as well. And again, it's sort of, it's part political thriller, part action hero. Good combo. 6 episodes, wrapped up the story. It's kind of done for now. They've got the option to carry it on, but it's, yeah, it was just a really good watch for me. And this is available on Prime Video.
I think you've got lots of people out there right now shouting Jack Bauer at you.
Jack, of course. Ugh, what's wrong with me? None of this half measures.
Well, I never watched it, and I know that's on my list. But yeah, I remember we did the shared watch on this one, and like you said, the John Krasinski, Wendell Pierce, Michael Kelly, those three together. Wendell Pierce is just so good as James Greer, and I just feel like for a really sort of, you know, another action oriented movie TV show, that they get a lot of humor in there. They had a lot of fun with it, and I would think if I looked across the 4 seasons, I felt like seasons 1 and 4 really stood out to me, like a great, strong start and a really strong ending. I thought it came together really, really well. It's the sort of show that could easily fall into cliches, and it just doesn't. It's quality. It's, you know, it's got that Prime Video making. It's movie quality. It's really, really good. And it's the show that for us, well, for me, I know we talked about it with The Quiet Place, but John Krasinski is a actor, really showed how much he's got in his locker.
Indeed. And I think because with the earlier seasons, it just felt like often they'd sort of like the story, they'd sort of take their foot off the pedal on the storytelling, whereas again with the 6 episodes and sort of knowing it's kind of the end of the series, I think it put the right amount of pressure on the storytelling and the action and moving the plot forward. So this is a highly recommended to watch. I don't know whether I'd recommend sitting down just binging all four seasons of Jack Ryan, unless this is kind of a full genre that you're a fan of, because I think it's, you might get a bit fatigued, but I think as a, it's potentially a bit of a slow burn, like, you know, watch, like, try to get through a season and come back and do another season. It's probably quite a good time.
Nice. Two strong all shows, right, then, for honourable mentions. Two strong shows.
What is your number two honourable mention?
Okay, another joint watch for us, Dan. Quite recent as well. This is season two of Bosch Legacy. So, I don't know what else I can say that we haven't said a lot, because we've watched a lot of Bosch and we've obviously watched both seasons of Bosch Legacy. But so this is the spin-off to the police series Bosch, who's quit the LAPD and he's on a journey now with his daughter and his legal attorney. And this, we've followed Harry Bosch throughout his career, and I don't think I can remember a season that started as strongly as this one, because of course we had the cliffhanger of Bosch season one. I should have said at the start of this podcast, actually, Dan, full spoilers for everything we're talking about as we go throughout, so just be warned. But it was such a, those, I'll never get past that opening with the, you know, the Maddie abduction story. I just thought it was just so strong. And then it went into another really well-written Michael Connelly story. It played out well. You just never get disappointed with Bosch in terms of the methodical approach. It just doesn't disappoint. It was so close to being in my 10. In the end, it became an honorable mention, but I couldn't have it not there at all.
I'm a bit like you. I'm so glad that you've covered this one, because it hasn't made it to my list. And I really wanted it to, because like, huge fan of, you know, what they've done with Bosch Legacy. And, you know, but like we said on the review a few episodes ago, I actually love the start of it and I love the end of it, but I sort of, the middle of the story didn't capture me as
That's
much.
Right.
So
That's
for that
right.
reason, like, it didn't quite make the list, but I'm super pleased that you've got it. And I, like you've said, like, Titus Welliver, he's amazing. Mimi Rogers, amazing. Madison Lintz, amazing. Like, just a star-studded cast, classic, like, cop drama. This is, you know, we talk about movies to watch with your parents. If your parents haven't seen any Bosch, get them all over it.
Absolutely.
This is the one. Like, it's safe enough, but it's also got a great story. It can kind of be a little bit slow burn at times, but it's, you know, when Harry Bosch, you know, when he gets, you know, gets ready for business, it's business time. So
it really is. And now that he's not a cop, it's even better. I think that's where it just takes a step up. Because I remember you and I were both gutted when Bosch ended, but now I think in his position as a private detective, He's loose with the rules now, and it's even better with him unhinged, because he was unhinged as a cop. And this is not the sort of podcast where we allow ourselves to go off tangent with questions, but I do, just came to me then, I was thinking, this is the sort of show, if I had to think of a show I could see, like old school TV that used to go, you know, the shows that would go for 20 seasons. If I had to choose a show that I would like to watch for 20 seasons, Bosch would be in amongst my picks. What would you have as your, if you could make any show go for 20?
Look, I think this, not only could it go for 20 seasons, it could have 24 episode seasons, because there's unlimited cop dramas. There's unlimited characters. Like, there's so many characters too. Like, you know, it could be called Bosch, but they could really focus in on different kind of, I don't know, from the lawyer's point of view to the new rookie's point of view to some other corruption that's happening. It's got so many options. I guess my question for you, Paul, is, do you think, you know, someone's listening to our top 10, could they just come in and jump in at Bosch Legacy? Like, or do you think they actually need to sort of go on the Bosch journey and do the full show first?
I think you could do either. I think because they start Bosch season one with a fairly, Bosch Legacy season one with a fairly sort of clear overview as to what his past was and where he is now, you kind of get that almost like you would in a recap. But I guess the things you'd miss out on is all of the history. That relationship between Harry and Maddie is strong. And we've grown up with Maddie being very young to where she is now as a newbie in the police force. And I think you just wouldn't quite have that same connection. You also, so that we have a lot of cameos from the Bosch series, which sort of just remind us of that universe that we're playing in. And I really like how they do it, because they don't overdo it. They always make it purposeful rather than just for the sake of it, you know. But having Crate and Barrel turn up, or, you know, having J. Edgar turn up, won't mean there will be no impact for the new viewer if you haven't seen the seven seasons of those characters before. So I'm not saying it would take away anything, because you could do it, but I'd still say go back to the start.
Yeah, why rob yourself of it? You know, like, we all know that, you know, we're all sort of guilty of kind of doom scrolling for what to watch next. Like, this is, if you haven't seen any of it, then, you know, this is great. If nothing else, like, at least sort of go into like a YouTube sort of summary of, you know, Bosch, you know, to set you up for this. But I think you'll get the most out of it if you've been on the whole journey.
I think what makes Bosch Legacy a better show as well, because these actors and the cast have all grown into these characters. They know these characters inside out. So it's not like they started filming Bosch Legacy on day one and didn't have anything. Yeah, they've got 7 years in the past. And so that's what makes, I think, Titus Welliver and Madison Lintz together on screen is probably the best on-screen father-daughter relationship that I can think of. I think it's so authentic. It's so good. I think Titus Welliver is always superb. But the standout, as we talked about in the season, was probably Officer Maddie Bosch, in terms of those, you know, the intense kidnapping, the trauma, returning to duty, the courtroom, all of those things were just superb. And we've got that great new theme music as well. Bosch always delivers on the opening credits, both visually and audio. It's very unlucky not to be in my 10, but it's my honorable mention.
And that's
available on... What are we watching this one on, Dan?
Prime Video,
yeah.
Prime Video. Yeah, look, this is a show like that I really debated with between like Jack Ryan and Bosch Legacy, so nice. I'm glad that we've got each other covered off in that regard.
That's warmed up. That's the warm-up, Dan. It's time to get into the business now.
This is the serious end of things. This is where the top 10 starts. So I'm going to peel this Band-Aid right off. So number 10 for me is Ahsoka, the TV show. So, and this was a tough one, I think, to decide whether I was going to put it on my list and where it was going to sit. And even thinking about it now, it's an interesting one, because I know, like Ahsoka, for you and me, Paul, is a very well-known character. We know her from The Clone Wars. We know her from Rebels. Like, we've been on the journey and seen this kind of come to life, both in The Mandalorian, The Book of Boba Fett, is something I could have never imagined as a Star Wars fan. Not to mention, you know, then bringing in all these other characters like Grand Admiral Thrawn, bringing in the crew from The Ghost, like Harrison Dula, Ezra Bridger. And then, like, you're kind of bringing in, you know, you're bringing Hayden Christensen back as Darth Vader and as Anakin Skywalker. This is the stuff of, you know, a Star Wars fan's dreams. And I think what is interesting about this, though, is, and I think what's kind of cool about it, and I think this is where the sort of the smarts of Dave Filoni come in, is if you didn't know any of the wider Star Wars story, like, this could have been a lot to take on. But everyone that I've spoken to, whether you're a deep nerd like you and I, or whether you're just kind of, you know, just kind of getting to learn about this character, seem to have had a really good time. And even Samara said at the end of the series, this is my favourite Star Wars series I've ever watched. And, you know, that's a bit cool, because then we have to sit down and we have to go through all the shows and we have to have a real big conversations. But I really enjoyed Ahsoka. It did a lot of fan service. I think it's set us up for a lot of interesting stories going forward. Was it perfect? No, but it gave me a lot as a fan, and I really wanted to sort of give it a shout out somewhere on my list.
I love this. This features, you won't hear it on this podcast from me, is my clue to you, but it's in my list. That's too much of a clue, in fact. I remember when we reviewed this early in the year, and we described this as like a love letter from Dave Filoni to the fans of Rebels and Clone Wars, but particularly Rebels, because he lifted up those characters that you and I had loved watching in animation form to live action just so seamlessly, and just brought them to life in ways that, you know, give or take Ezra with his beard, I think it was just so much better than I could possibly have imagined. I think they just all firstly look and felt how I wanted them and how I imagined them, you know, right down to even some of the side characters like the Night Sisters, Lars Mikkelsen coming back to voice Thrawn. There was so much in there that's just appealed. And, you know, I think the linchpin of this, and of course we'd had it already with Obi-Wan last year, which also featured in our list last year, but the Anakin Skywalker, the Hayden Christensen factor, was just something very, very special. And that is something that if you're not a Star Wars fan, you just won't get, and that's fine. You know, in that respect, it will be something that, you know, it will sort of pass you by, and you'll just be able to watch it without that. But it was just so good. They did some of the most extraordinary things that I've ever seen as a Star Wars fan. You know, just some of the scenes where he was walking along and then it would flash to Vader and then back, and then just having them back as Padawan and Master again, those two that we'd watched through what, 7 seasons of Clone Wars in animated form. And I don't know, Dan, but I feel like there's at least what, 100 odd episodes. So we're talking about a lot of hours of content of them animated. To see them together in live action, it's really special.
Not to mention that when you think about what they've done with Ahsoka over, you know, how will we get 8 episodes of this TV show? And not only that, we've had a whole bunch of new characters introduced. And this is always something that kind of surprises and delights me. Like, you know, you think about Ray Stevenson, who has unfortunately passed away, but is Baylan Skull. You've got Ivana Sakakno, who plays Shin Hati. Like, these are great new characters. I love that Morgan Elsworth, you know, was brought over from The Mandalorian Season 2. Like, it just, this is why I'm just so excited about Dave Filoni taking over the whole sort of Star Wars universe, is that man holds a vision like no one else. And I think he's just like he's worked so hard to kind of, like, you know, he's come up through the sort of animated ranks. He's telling the stories that the fans want to hear. He's bringing in some of the amazing expanded universe books and making them canon. It's, you know, even just looking at this list of, like, David Tennant is so young, like, such a, so good. And I think, you know, for a show about Ahsoka Tano, so many other great characters, and just to see the Clone Wars, which we've only seen in an animated form in live action over one episode, and just for like, you know, minutes, was so powerful and so meaningful. And I feel like I bang on about this all the time, but it's stuff like this that makes the prequels even better. And I know, like, prequels get such a hard time, but it's like, they're getting stronger by the day with this type of content. And I think that's what's going to happen to, you know, The Force Awakens and The Rise of Skywalker, etc. Over time, once, you know, Dave Filoni's finished sort of pulling all the strings, even though it's going to be a lot of content, I think he's going to fill in a lot of the gaps, and it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it is filling in gaps, and it's just adding extra depth to things that you already enjoy. And I think it's the attention to detail where, you know, and this is, I don't know what your Instagram algorithm sort of brings up in your search, but for me, there's a lot of Star Wars in there, and there's a lot of half and half pictures where half of it's the animated picture and then half is the live action. And it's things like the body language, where the actors, the cast, you know, Rosario Dawson, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, these people have come in and replicated animated characters, and they've taken it right to the level of the position of a hand or anything that you saw in the animated series. It sounds trivial when I say it out loud, but when you watch it, you really appreciate it. And, you know, lots of nice little cameos. We had Temuera Morrison return as the clone trooper Rex. That was good. The C-3PO moment with Chopper was fun. There's a lot of little fanboyish type things or fangirlish type things in there, but I just think, you know, the Hayden Christensen return is something that can be savored, and something that I need to, I think, classify, as you said, it just brought you a lot of joy. It's just very different in its pitch and what it attempts to do compared to other Star Wars series. And to the point of, this is my favorite Star Wars series ever, that's a really interesting question. I think off the top of my head, if I was forced to answer it right now, I think I'd still say Andor, but I'd be open to the big conversation around it.
I think you're right. So yeah, look, this is fantastic. You can check this one out on Disney Plus. There's a ton of great Star Wars series over there. It's to be fresh to watching these and having never seen them. What a delightful time you're in for. But that is my number 10, Paul. Where are you at with your number 10?
Okay, so shout out for a regular listener, Jacinta from the Hizat here in Aotearoa, for getting me onto this one.
Jacinta the Hut.
There we go. My number 10 is season one of The Diplomat. And so this is about a career diplomat called Kate Wyler who lands this high-profile job for which she is not suited, which then has massive implications for her marriage and her whole political future. This is one of those shows that, based on the plot and the premise that I just read out to you there, I'm like, I don't know. You know, it doesn't, I don't expect to get into that, let alone get into it so much that it's now in my top 10 show of the year. But it's that good. It's so good for so many reasons. So many great performances, so many good lines, so many great scenes. Kerry Russell as the lead. I've never really watched her in much beyond Star Wars, I guess. And I just think she's a terrific lead in the series. She plays a strong, intelligent, very sarcastic, very politically astute diplomat. And it's one of those shows. I'm trying to think of other shows that I've kind of looked at. Maybe House of Cards, maybe, I don't know, just sort of look at the plot and go, I don't know if that's for me. And again, it was the recommendation that convinced me to go in, and so glad I did.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm sure we've talked about this on the pod before. Have you watched The Americans, Paul?
No, but we did talk about it, I remember, yes.
Yeah. So Kerry Russell is an absolute powerhouse. She's amazing in The Americans. I'll watch her in anything. Why haven't I watched this, Paul? Like, when I look at it again, it kind of, obviously a Netflix series, did it come out around the same time as The Night Agent? But again, the sort of the poster almost has a little bit of a Homeland type of vibe to it, but
yep.
I guess
yep.
less CIA, because it looks more sort of more drama than that, maybe.
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely drama thriller as opposed to action thriller. Certainly that is the case. But I think that's part of the fun of why this works well with these two characters. So the husband, who he's a very respected former ambassador played by Rufus Sewell, who always gives a good performance. I would say that this is possibly his best role, perhaps alongside Kaleidoscope, which was also this year. But Kerry Russell is she's got this outward confidence about her that is always sort of leaning on these inner doubts that you sort of are privy to in her private conversations. So she's very sort of humble. She's never arrogant, but she's always likable. And then she has this other side to her personality, which I hope she won't mind me saying, but kind of reminds me of my wife in that, you know, she will not tolerate idiots and unfairness in the world. And I love that. And she's just really good in that. And she doesn't, you know, she doesn't allow this sort of, I guess you'd say, this very male dominated world to stop her from doing what she wants to do. And it's, you know, she's dealing with the US president. She's dealing with the UK prime minister. She's having direct conversations with each of them independently. Also, the president is played by Michael McKean from, you know, Better Call Saul. And you've got the UK prime minister played by Rory Kinnear from the Bond movies that we've watched for years. Honestly, this is 100% recommendation for me. 8 hours, less than an hour an episode, very easy watch. And I think when I think about shows like, you know, like we've talked about Jack Ryan, The Night Agent, and this one, they all have similarities. They all, as you say, with the post, they all have that Homeland vibe, but each with their own flavor and style. So action thriller, this is a drama thriller. And I think of all the US political or government agency type shows, out of my list, as a little spoiler, this one's top of the pops for me in terms of those sort of shows. This is the highest one, and that is available on Netflix then.
This is very good. That's what I love about top 10 is, like, you know, we might have talked about a show throughout the year, but if it's hit your top 10, like, it kind of puts another weighting behind it. So
it is.
I'm adding it to my watch list. This is This is very good news.
It would be good if you do get a Max Sedan, because the second season is, I believe, scheduled. Do we have a date on it? I just think it may be around April 2024. So, yeah.
Okay, very good. Let's look, we're coming in two shows for you on Netflix with The Night Agent and The Diplomat. So
it's a strong showing from Netflix already, because I remember when we did the list last year, I had nothing in there from Netflix, and I was like, I don't know, do I need Netflix anymore? And already it's proven to be.
Very interesting. All right, shall I take us into number nine?
Number nine.
So number nine, this is the third season of a TV show. This is Happy Valley season 3. So is this on your list, Paul?
It's not, so I'm delighted that it's on yours.
Oh, very good. So Happy Valley, this is probably, is it underrated or maybe unknown, but this is one of my favorite English police drama shows. We have had to wait a very long time for season 3. So it's only 3 seasons. The third season was the final. Season 2 came out in 2016, and season 3, 2023. So it took a long time for the stars to realign. And not only did the stars realign, we have got a fantastic cast with the show, fantastic storytelling. And what I love about a police show like this is it kind of shows that you can do fantastic storytelling, have a wonderful cast, tell some quite sort of dark stories, but you know, it's never about kind of the, you know, gun and violence type sort of, you know, thing that you often associate with police shows. And I think that's what British, I think, police shows do well. It's there's intensity, but there's some real sort of human scenes in there. And I think Sarah Lancashire, who plays Catherine Carwood, incredible actress. She's a police sergeant with so much heart and history. You can't help but kind of cheer her on. And then she's just got this incredible kind of, the whole cast, like Siobhan Finneran, who plays her sister, who we've seen in other shows like Time. Just such a fantastic group of supporting actors and actresses around her. If you haven't seen this TV show, I could not recommend it more highly. From the very first moment I put the show on, I actually remember I watched it with my dad, actually, and he got hooked in as well. And I'm just so glad that we got this third and final season.
Yeah, really glad it came, you know, because Sarah Lancaster, she was the sort of the driving force as to whether it would or wouldn't happen. She was the one that said yes, and also this is the last one as well. And you know, Sally Rainwhite, who wrote this specifically for her. She as the writer, she also did Last Tango in Halifax, also with her. So if you enjoy her performances, I think you might enjoy that. So that's a show I also very much enjoyed. I was just looking at the episode because I remember reviewing it, and I peeked behind the curtain, as I've said before a couple of times, Dan, and you choose the episode titles of all of our podcasts, and I knew this was one that cracked me up when I saw it, and it was the line, the title was, I think I might have singed one of your crochet blankets. It's such, Sarah Lancashire's delivery of the line is worth it, trust me. The two of them together in particular, you mentioned Siobhan Finneran as Claire, just so good. She's so convincing in this. The two of them is just so good. James Norton as Tommy Lee Royce, he has a real presence because of what he's done in the earlier seasons. It doesn't go away. And it's one of those shows that once you start it, you just want an episode every night. And, you know, I feel like, we were talking before about Bosch, about how many seasons. I feel like this, I could watch another 6 seasons of her solving crimes. You know, I'm related to Tommy Lee Royce. You know, that story has been put to bed. But I just, this dry sarcasm that she brings to the role, again, another character who refuses to tolerate fools, and then how she just cuts people down to size, just absolutely, absolutely brilliant. The best use of the word twat on screen by anyone ever when she uses that word. It's, I can't do the accent and do it justice. It's just really good.
This is a show I would happily sit down and watch all three seasons of again, because it's I just think as a package, so good, and it was definitely going to be on my watch again list. So this is Happy Valley season 3. You can watch all three seasons here on TVNZ. Highly recommended.
100%. All right. Number 9 for me, Dan, and I'll start it with, again, another shout out. This one, shout out to Sador, a member of our Discord community, who got me into this one. This is the miniseries Bodies, the Stephen Graham series on Netflix, I might add. Another Netflix show for me. It's outrageous. This is about four detectives in four different time periods of London, and they find themselves all investigating the same murder. So you've got a bit of sci-fi in there, you've got a bit of drama, you've got a bit of crime. It combines a lot of really, really good genres that I always enjoy. Such a good, just well put together, because, as I say, because you're watching something that's set in 2023 and 2053 and 1843, of course, you are watching what feels like four different TV shows, and yet the fact that they're all interlinked is really, really clever. I said when I reviewed it at the time, it's got a bit of a dark vibe about it in terms of that sort of moving around in time. You're just hooked right from the first episode, and if it's a, you know, if the hook gets you, you're really in for a treat with these eight episodes.
This is the show I was at a work Christmas dinner. We were talking about, you know, sort of top TV shows for people, and a lot of people talked about Bodies. And again, you know, like I remember you bring it to the pod, fascinating kind of plot, interested about this different sort of time period piece. It's another one I'm going to have to add to the watch list. And especially, like what am I doing dilly-dallying on this with someone like Stephen Graham at the helm? Like, this is class.
Yeah, I mean, I always love him in anything, no matter what it is. A great cast all over the place. You've got Amaka Okafor, who you'll know from The Sandman, Kyle Soller from Star Wars Andor, Michael Byrne from Indiana Jones and Gangs of New York. There's a lot of sort of actors and actresses that you don't necessarily see that often, but they all come together, and they're all, in terms of the different time period they're cast, and they all do a great job. There's no other show out there this year that's anything like it. And I think that is also, you know, I was trying to classify before, you know, I've got my action thriller, I've got my drama, I've got my political, you know, there's nothing like this out there at all. And, you know, I just, each time zone is so legitimate, and in each instance, the focus always on the same spot on the same street. And so you can instantly tell what time period you're on based on the street lighting, things like that. It's just really clever. In addition to Sador, we've also inspired Ian from Miami to watch it. He rates it as a top show of TV of 2023. So, you know, between the three of us, that's three opinions I think our listeners have come to trust over time. I would definitely recommend this. And because it's a miniseries, it's a real easy watch as well.
I love a miniseries. Like, you know, I just, especially in a world where you never know where things are going to continue or get cancelled, or just a one and done story is perfect in this day and age. So, look, I'm making a list I'm writing down your top 10 just for the archives, and I'm putting a little W next to it, which means I'm going to watch it.
That's great. I love this. And just to give you some context around, because I said it's a bit like Dark, and we know you and I both struggled with how complicated it was. If you think about Dark, if you think about Lazarus Project season 2, and then I put Bodies in that mix, Bodies is the easiest to follow of all those three. It's still quite nice. Sort of like, oh, what's going on? Where are we? But it's definitely worth watching in a binging over maybe 2 to 3 nights, I would say.
This is perfect, Paul. I am going to need to. I've got an opportunity for some binging coming up, so this is fantastic. All right, shall I take us into number 8?
Number 8 already.
Number 8, we're racing through. So this is a show that I guess obviously reviewed this year, 2023. This is Special Ops Lioness. So this is the Taylor Sheridan series, 8 episodes. Look, it's got Taylor Sheridan. I don't know if I need to say much more. So this is basically a special ops program where they recruit and train they often get like female Marines, and they kind of train them to be deep cover experts, and they sort of go into, you know, off the book situations. And you know, with Taylor Sheridan, yes, you're getting, you know, yes, you're getting action, yes, you're getting high drama, yes, you're getting good storytelling. This is the show I've recommended to a few people, and they've always come back to me and like, Lioness is amazing. Mm. And it's got like, not only is it sort of a fantastic story, great pacing, it's got a fantastic cast. And even though on the sort of the front poster, you've got Morgan Freeman, you've got Nicole Kidman, like these are huge names, but it's not just those, like it's, there's enough space for all the cast. Zoe Saldana is our main actress in this, and she's absolutely fantastic. She heads up the Lioness program. She has just as much kind of drama and stress in her home life back on US soil as she does dealing with anti-terrorist things around the world. So never a dull moment. I really, really hope we get more seasons of this. The show is, it's all the guns.
This is a show I cannot add to my watch list, Dan, because it's already added. I added it the instant you reviewed it, because I remember how much, sometimes when you talk about shows, something triggers me when I can just tell how excited you are about the watch. And I remembered this was one. And this is also, I don't know if you saw me, I just scratched off on my bingo card. We were talking before we recorded. This is one of three shows I picked for you. So that's good. I thought it might be Michael Kelly on the poster as well. He looks like he's come straight from the set of House of Cards or Jack, you know, Jack Ryan. I'll watch him in anything. I was just watching the trailer play as you were talking. It does look top quality, and yeah, I'm looking forward to bringing this into the podcast. I will do it at some point, for us to maybe do a bit of a deeper dive. And then I guess, maybe before season two comes out, it would be handy to do that.
Indeed. So this is another one that you can check out on Prime Video. So again, Netflix and Prime Video, they're smashing it out between, you know, our Jack Ryans and our Bosch Legacy and now the show. It's I think, you know, Prime Video, I think maybe started their journey into streaming a little bit weaker, I would say, than some of our other platforms. Mm-hmm. But I reckon over the last year or so, they've kind of gone from strength to strength. And we're often finding ourselves watching shows on Prime Video. And it's great to see.
I think alongside, obviously, Disney, but I was going to say Apple as well, it's one of those platforms that you just know you're going to get, even if it's not for you or whatever, you always know it's going to look very good. It's going to be well produced. It's always going to be pristine quality. It's always the ultra HD that you get with Prime as well. I notice it always just looks great as well. So that's always a draw card.
I guess for us, it's often in New Zealand where the Paramount Plus content ends up.
That's right.
On Prime Video. So it's look, this is a good one. It's, if you're a fan of Yellowstone, you're going to find a lot to like in here. The first eight episodes, you'll melt through them like a hot knife and butter. It's highly recommended. All right, Paul, what is your number eight?
Okay, number eight for me. This is a first local TV show mention, season one of The Gone. This I talked about at length when I reviewed it, because it really, really, really impressed me. It is, and I said it before, I'll say it again, this is the best New Zealand TV drama I think I've ever seen. Certainly in like the last, I don't know how many years, as far back as I can remember. Absolutely superb. It's about an Irish detective who teams up with a Kiwi cop to find a couple who've vanished somewhere in the rural New Zealand land, and their journey together is obviously about solving the crime, but the journey of them together and the things that are going on in their lives, it's just absolutely fascinating. It's a mix of Kiwi and Irish writers who put it together. Also, it's filmed here, but, you know, mix of that sort of like bringing the Irish flavour and the New Zealand flavour was really, really good. As you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, the crime and police dramas, so I consider myself, you know, reasonably experienced to make a, you know, whether something good or not. This is in the top half of the table, as we often say. All the ingredients there. As I said, shot here in New Zealand. It was shot in Te Aroha and also Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland. Very compelling story. one of those ones that, and I mean this with respect to other New Zealand shows, but sometimes I feel like it could be a little too predictable. This one, not predictable at all in terms of how things would go, or, you know, who was doing what, all the layers you'd want, really great characters, just a really good watch. And as I say, from a Kiwi perspective, it's just so, so great to see quality shows like this. And of course, this won Best Drama at the New Zealand TV Awards this year as well. So it's not just me saying it.
Didn't we get a shout out from Akrishla Tada Kupe in the mailbag at some point?
We did. We did indeed. And there's a couple of things that go on in the DMs as well when we found out about season two had been confirmed and sent her the Instagram post of it. She replied back and said, "I literally found out about this 10 minutes before you." It's just such a classic New Zealand way of doing things. Like, there's no sort of big reveal. Like, they find out when we find out. And she follows the pod as well. And I have to say, there were some really great cast performances throughout this. And I think Akrishla Tada Kupe is, who plays that lead role of Diana Huia, she's just this driving force. She's very funny and also very, in those hard-hitting scenes, and there's a lot of them in the show, very, very convincing. Michelle Fairley, who you may know as Catelyn Stark in Game of Thrones, very, very good. Rachel Morgan, very, 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 very convincing. Those would be my sort of three standouts from this.
This is pretty huge, Paul. Like, I was just flicking through our list. This is our first Kiwi TV show in a half measures top 10.
Incorrect. If you check back 2 years, we had Creamery season one.
Oh.
Yes.
That must be in 2021 because
yeah.
this is my record keeping. I've got my list, but I don't have any details for you. And then from 2022 onwards, I've got both of our details. So
okay.
Yeah, I've stepped up my admin since then.
That's good.
So,
yeah.
No, but I still had it in 2021.
But it's great to have another Kiwi show in there. And I do, you may recall when we talked about it previously, I felt it was really refreshing to hear, you know, a fair bit of te reo Māori being spoken in a TV show. And I think for like a mainstream TV, if it's appropriate to call it that, it's got way more te reo than I would ever see in anything of its equivalent. And it's real, it's meaningful. There's a real cultural thread throughout this that I thought was well done, you know, and it just helped to bring it to life. And I think for people watching overseas, it gives a much more authentic story of, you know, the Aotearoa New Zealand in terms of what it is and the various sort of cultural lenses, and in a crime setting, very, very, you know, very, very poignant how those cultures collide. So yeah, season two, as I say, on its way. For me, it's set that new standard for Kiwi television. So yeah, kia ora, available to watch on TVNZ Plus.
I love that. This is a very good shout. All right, we've got two to go before the end of this episode. So number seven for me is another Taylor Sheridan TV show. This is Mayor of Kingstown season two. So, it's been scratched off the bingo card. This was a show that I kind of came late to. Season two just came out at the start of this year, actually. Season three isn't coming until 2025. But this is if you're a long-time listener of the pod, this stars Jeremy Renner. He's basically a power broker in a town that's, you know, basically built around prisons. And he's the go-between between the prisoners, police, lawyers. He's a classic Taylor Sheridan character where he wields a lot of power. He loses his temper. A lot of dark stuff happens. He truly runs this town, the way that I think Taylor Sheridan writes and produces and directs shows that just got to really bring this to life. And I think it's so great that you're sort of bringing, you know, an actor like Jeremy Renner, who's normally we'd see in sort of big blockbuster movies, to a TV show like this and giving him a different platform. Again, fantastic cast, interesting story. If you love a good prison drama thriller, this is the one for you. Not sure if it's one for with the parents, as long as they'd have to be sort of down with a little bit of violence. It can get pretty dark at times. my wife sort of walked away from it a few times, being like, this is not for me, but would then sort of come back and be like, what's happening now? But yeah, this is so good. I can't recommend it enough. I'm so excited that I finally jumped on it. That's another one too that's on Prime Video that I was seeing the title card for a long time. It took me a long time to finally get around to it. It was a recommendation from a friend. Watch both seasons. Incredibly dark, incredibly good. Can't say much more.
And yeah, just as you said, this is a couple of seasons. So this is season two of Mayor of Kingston, because of course the first season was 2022. This is a company town, and the business is incarceration, I believe is the tagline. I've spoken to a few people who've watched this, and again, brutal, really holding nothing back, but really strong TV. Jeremy Renner's always good value, I think. I always loved him in that Bourne Legacy movie, and he never quite got along. And I would love to have seen him go off on a little tangent. You know, I just think he was really suited for that sort of role. It looks like when I see him in this trailer, it just looks like he's real boss in it. Really high ratings across the board. And season three, 2025. So there's a couple of years for anyone who wants to catch up before the new season comes out. But it sounds like it's definitely worth adding to list.
And I think, you know, like Jeremy Renner obviously suffered a terrible accident this year. He was in a snowmobile accident, I believe. So, and then, you know, you mix in the writer's strike, the actor's strike, all the various sort of delays. And so we're lucky beginning another season. I imagine this is probably going to be, hopefully it goes on for sort of four or five seasons. There's another, just, you know, you're talking about Jeremy Renner. You know, there's another movie just that sort of remind me of The Town Where, and I absolutely love that quote. I need your help. I can't tell you what it is. You can never ask me about it later, and we're going to hurt some people. Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
This is like a slightly more mature version of Jeremy Renner in The Town, and it's never quite clear what he is. Like he's not a lawyer. He's not sort of a, like he's kind of a negotiator. He is a power broker, but it's like, it's an undefined kind of skill set. It's a real kind of Winston Wolf. I solve problems and people trust me for it. So, this is again, all the guns for me. Such a great show.
I think that's a really good chat about the town as well. Cause you know, I said, oh, you know, him as Aaron Cross in the Bourne Legacy, but actually that town performance was, and that's maybe the vibe I'm getting from this trailer even more perhaps. And he was terrifying in that movie, you know, just like a real loose cannon. And so if this is him, a slightly more mature, again, it's been added to my list, Dan. So perhaps before season three, you may be ready for a rewatch of one and two in 2025. Maybe we, you know, our calendars are pretty empty at this point, I think, for 2025.
Yeah, it's just checking now. Yep, still empty. So, this is the show again. Anything that's kind of on my top 10 is an easy rewatch for me. And I kind of love a rewatch sometimes because it's a real chance to kind of reunite with some of your favorite characters. And there's some characters in the show which are fantastic.
Awesome. So, number seven for me, Dan, is another joint watch of ours. So let's see if this one's on your list. This is season one of Silo. So this is an Apple TV show about men and women who live in a giant silo underground where there's regulations in place that they think is in place to protect them. Is this on your list, Dan?
It is not on my list, but it was on my running list for it's, you know, basically for the whole year. So I'm glad that you've managed to pick this one up.
Only one crossover so far out of these five. It's good because it gives us more content to talk about. This is one of those shows that for me, it was like when I asked someone, oh, have you seen Silo? Anyone who'd seen it, straight away their eyes just widened and they'd look at me and they'd be like, yes. Because there was just this excitement of someone else you can talk to about the series and theorize about what is going on, what is actually the real meaning as to why these people are underground, what's gone on, what's going to happen next, all of those questions. And shows like this instantly get me interested when they're just so you know, just like bodies, they're so unique. And I can't really point to anything that's really similar. You know, everyone lives in the silo. We don't know why. People can go outside if they really want to by saying the magic words, I want to go outside. But you can see through the window, it's a wasteland. And then you can watch people go outside. And then after 15 to 30 seconds, you're done. You collapse and you're dead. And it's just a fascinating concept. And I just found it. Yeah, it's one of those series that I'm, you know, if I could fast track any series, I think alongside Andor and Severance, which I'm still waiting on, this would be my pick of shows I want season two of.
This is another show with a fantastic cast. Like Rebecca Ferguson absolutely smashes it out of the park. Common, Tim Robbins, Ian Glenn, just so good. And something I really loved about this show is the almost the misdirect of, you know, the first episode, you know, like really sets you up for a bunch of different characters. And then all of a sudden, like, nope, we're going with a different direction. And it kind of, it throws you off your game from the get-go. And it's a show that leaves you, like, it has a real Lost vibe to me where there's so many, like, unanswered questions and you're slowly sort of being drip-fed some answers. And I almost wonder whether, like, with Silo, and I don't know how many seasons they're going to do, but I presume there'll be at least sort of three or four, it would almost be like, you know, a fantastic binge to sort of discover when it's all out there. Because what I find hard with a show like this is, as much as I love it, the unknown is so difficult. And so I know the books are out there, but, you know.
Are they?
There's books sort of based, which this TV show is based on. So, yeah, look, this is a good shout and a very good recommendation.
I know what you mean about how you thought it was going in one direction. Because I remember when we watched this, I actually thought at one point Rashida Jones was like a lead character. But then after the first episode, it was, you know, she's done. And, you know, it was great to see her. I haven't seen her since Parks and Recreation. But, you know, Ian Glenn, as you mentioned, Tim Robbins. We did a peak performance earlier this year for Tim Robbins. And I remember we both had Silo in our top two picks. So, you know, such a different role for him. Real terrifying, quiet, manic, controlling prison warden type vibe. It was just really, really good. Just, I think it's a really weird when your protagonist and the people inside the silo like how you feel for them, because it's like, they should they be there? Shouldn't they be there? And as the audience, we have no evidence that the world outside isn't actually a wasteland, because, you know, there's no sort of telling as to why people are collapsing when they do go outside. Are they being poisoned from within their suit? What's going on? And it's that, like you said, it's the unknowns that actually make me really, really fascinated. And I think it's a good shout saying Lost, because that's always like the, what's going on? Why are we having to put these numbers in? What's going on with this island? It's that same sort of thing. It's, you know, a post-apocalyptic show. Is there life outside? And of course, the way we end this, this first season, gives us a clue as to what might be happening and where we're going to go. But, you know, this people being basically, are they being used as slaves to keep a power generator going for the actual people that live somewhere else? You know, are they just being treated like this as prisoners? There's so many theories about this. And again, just beautiful sets, beautiful production. Just, you know, very, when you sort of look at the photos, you get a sense, there's no light because it's all underground. And so it's a very dark show. This is a show you need to watch, preferably in winter with the curtains over, so you can actually really appreciate the darkness of it.
And I think too, like just being Apple TV, you know that Apple TV is, again, just high investment in, like, you know, HD quality, like good casting, good props, good direction. And so, yeah, a lot of mystery. I think TV producers have learned a lot since the days of Lost, where they actually give you enough answers to keep you satisfied, but also give, like, set up enough sort of questions to make you sort of want to come back. Whereas I feel like when I think back to the Lost days, it was just a ton of questions that never really got answered.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And I think you said about Rebecca Ferguson, just terrific in that lead role. I just thought she was, you know, without doubt, one of the best performances I've seen her in. And on the subject of Apple TV that you mentioned there, I had someone recently ask me, they're like, I'm gonna do the free trial for 14 days or whatever of Apple, what's your top two shows I should watch? And so I gave them Severance, For All Mankind, and Silo as my three goes to, if you're gonna sort of have some time with an Apple login and just go for it, the Silo would be amongst it for me.
Mm-hmm. And even now, like you could even add on like the morning show, see like this
Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. There's a lot of good on there too. And I think, you know, like Apple TV probably isn't one that you need to be subscribed to, you know, 365 days of the year, but it is one that you probably want to come in, you know, and spend a few weeks with every now and again.
Indeed. So our final show of this pod, Dan, is our number six. What have you got for
number
me?
Number six. Yeah, all right. So this is another TV show on Prime Video. This is Swarm. So Swarm is a TV show I reviewed earlier in the year about a young woman who she's basically an obsessed fan, and she's kind of following this a Beyonce type person. It's not like it's kind of rumored to be that this is sort of a, you know, telling of a obsessed fan, and it's sort of set in a Beyonce kind of, I don't know whether it's true or urban legend type sort of setting, but this is a really fantastic, you know, new show directed by Donald Glover, who is like, you know, he's an absolute legend, both on the screen, fantastic musician, he's comedic, he's serious.
He does everything, this guy.
He's everything, you know. He's in Star Wars, like he's got it all. And so this is seven episodes, and you kind of just follow this girl's amazing, or I would say amazing, but it's an incredibly sort of dark story. And Dominic Fishback is our main actress here, and she plays Dre. Just her, like, you know, just I don't know whether you remember me telling you about this, Paul, but like, for example, like if I bought you tickets to this musician show and you're like, I don't really care for it, like she would take that so personally, and you know, you may be done for. And it just kind of follows her story as she's kind of a trail of death and destruction, really, as she eventually gets closer and closer to this pop star idol of her. And it's, you know, it's got some great cameos too, like Billie Eilish makes a cameo in there. It was just sort of an unexpected, really great drama thriller. I would almost sort of say dark comedy. And I can't speak highly enough about Dominic Fishback. Like, she's absolutely incredible in this. She's so believable. It's so interesting. It leaves you wanting to sort of like follow more about this character, learn more about her. Like, it's just a good story of obsession.
Looking at the pictures and just watching the trailer play as you're talking there, Dan, the one word you used, which didn't seem in keeping with any of that I saw, was comedy. And yet now I look at the genres it's been classified. It's been classified as a comedy, drama, thriller.
Yeah, and that's why I say dark comedy, because it's not a Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like sort of that sort of joke. Like, it's much more, like, it's very, very real. And the dark comedy sort of comes out in sort of the way that Dre just sort of gets so obsessed, and her interaction with other people who are either fans or not fans. And, you know, if you're a fan, like, there's this real sort of competition between them. And I don't know, there's just something kind of about, like, you getting in the head of a character who has this obsessive nature. And I think what I like about this show is it was something different. It was something fresh. It was something that I haven't, you know, like, so often you sort of, like, when I think about my list, sort of coming in with season three, season two, season whatever, and this is just something brand new, potentially a one and done, great rating, great cast. It's got all the goods to be a classic. It's, again, probably not one for the parents, but it's one that, if you like that sort of crime thriller, a good one to sort of watch on a cozy Saturday night.
I noticed that this is not on my list. So when we spoke of it last, obviously I didn't get enough from you. Now it's in your top 10. I'm thinking maybe I should. Is it for me, Dan?
Is it for you? I think it might be. I'm not sure. I think it wouldn't be a classic one for you, but it might be one that maybe you give it, if you give an episode a go. It's, you know, only seven episodes. It's not a huge commitment. Yeah. I wouldn't think of it as your typical genre, But the fact that it rates so highly in my list, I would almost say you're obliged to.
Yeah, it is an obligation. What I'm hearing is you're saying the words that you don't want to say out loud, which is, I don't know if you're cool enough for this, Paul, but you know, give it a go, sunshine.
Indeed, indeed. So that is another one on Prime Video. Give it a watch. You'll be able to, as soon as you sort of look at the, almost sort of this, even the stills of it on IMDb, give you a bit of a sense of the tone and the sort of level of intensity and drama of this. So check it out. So that is my first half of my list. What about you, Paul? Where are you at?
This is the last one for me. It's also on my bingo card for you, Dan. So let's see how I go. Shout out to our Patreon producer, Diana from the Capti Coast, actually. When she first mentioned the show, I wasn't that keen, as I thought it might be a slapstick comedy. She said, oh, you know, do you want to watch this? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And so after 5 minutes of watching it, she said, you've got to come and watch this. This is season one of Beef. Does it make the list?
It doesn't make the list, but it was wow. So close. It was so close.
My first red mark on the bingo ticket.
I'm so glad that you've brought this to the table. I almost feel it is wrong of me not to include it. So thank you to you and Diana for writing this error.
So this one, if you haven't heard us talk about this before, this is two people let a road rage incident burrow into their minds and slowly consume their every thought and action. It really appeals to my personality for some reason. And yet when I looked at that the first time, when I looked at the poster, I just thought, because it says, oh, comedy drama, I thought this is going to be a bit slapstick. So Diana started watching this by herself, and within the first 5 minutes, she just pressed stop and she insisted I give the first 5 minutes a go. What a great decision, because it was a real lesson for me to not have preconceptions about a show based on a poster, because it was right up my alley. Incredible TV show. It's one of those series that keeps getting better till the end for me as well. I just thought it takes comedy drama to the next level. And I think the writer, Lee Sung-jin, just did a superb job. It kept me hooked. It kept me always wanting to watch the next episode. The investment in the characters for me was really, really high. Like, for both characters, I didn't want either one of them to win this battle of road rage. And it's a lesson, Dan. It is a lesson to all of us that this, you could have the slightest moment in time, you know, that can provoke an emotional response, you know, like road rage, or maybe someone at work says something on a Teams call, or a person skips the queue at the supermarket checkout and you react. But that reaction can lead to consequences, and not just for you, depending on how far this beef, hence the name Beef, goes.
I think too, the great thing about this TV show is, like, I just love Steven Yeun. Like, he's, you know, like, we, like, you and I probably first came across him in The Walking Dead, and he's been a favorite in that TV show, and he's just gone on to do so many great movies and TV shows. And I think that just there's something about the tension between Stephen and Ali Wong that just, it just kind of works. And it's amazing that they can kind of build an ten episode sort of story around their frustration. But I think by sort of delving deeper into their personal lives, there's a lot here to like. It's very funny. I'm glad that it's a mini series. Like, I'm glad it's not something they kind of like drag on forever. But if they were, like, I would more like them to carry it on in the sense of with a whole different, like, cast, almost a little bit like, you know, in a White Lotus type sense. This is like two different people who have like an incident that creates beef.
Yeah, that could work. That's a nice idea, actually. Just like, you know, with time, different people in different prisons, different people with different beef. I like that. Both the leads, great. I think Ali Wong is probably the standout for me. I think her energy, her rage, the way that she responds is my inner voice between the hours of 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays at work sometimes, I swear. It's just the story flips from one person having the upper hand to the other, and it's kind of a little bit outrageous in terms of the lengths that they go to, but not, it never gets to that over-the-top point that I thought it might. It's just so entertaining, and it's that whole, I cannot wait to see the other person's face when they see what they've done, like this, what they go for. And there's something about Road Rage. I remember when you and I reviewed the Russell Crowe movie Unhinged. There's something about the when something happens, it's just so relatable as a driver that it does always speak to me in terms of thinking, I just, you know, just think twice before, because my body language behind the wheel is different to what my body language would be in the office or on the street. And I think you just need to be mindful of that. And so I just think this show is, for anyone who's ever had that road rage, I think you'll get something. It's violent, it's raw, it's hard hitting. Yeah, just really, really good.
This is great, Paul, and another Netflix as well. So
yes,
you've come incredible. In, you've come in strong. What have you got? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Including the honourable mentions. Yeah.
That's right. Well, I tell you what has surprised me with this list, Paul, is that normally you and I have lots of crossovers. Mm. So I'm expecting those crossovers to appear in the second half of this podcast because this is unheard of.
Yeah, I've got, according to my bingo card, then I have got us down for 1, 2, 3 more crossovers. So we'll see.
It might be a short episode, the next one. It might be a 10-minute episode as well.
It could be, or there may be some surprises in there. We'll have to wait till next week then.
All right. So should we just like rattle this off really quickly? So the first half of your top 10, including two honorable mentions. So you've got The Night Agent season 1, Bosch Legacy season 2. You've got and then for your 10 to 6, you've got The Diplomat season 1, Bodies, which is a mini series, The Gone season 1, Silo season 1, and Beef season 1.
Beef is a mini series. Yeah, you're right. I think I called it season 1, but you're right. We are, I think you're right. I think it is a mini series. Yeah.
I'll update the archives right now so that we don't have this error again. And then for my honourable mention, I've got The Mandalorian Season 3 and then Jack Ryan Season 4. And then for my 10 to 6, I have got Ahsoka Season 1, Happy Valley Season 3, Special Ops Lioness Season 1, Mayor of Kingsdown Season 2 and Swarm Season 1.
Awesome. Top quality, top tier TV.
Well, I guess this brings us to the end of this episode. You're going to have to tune in next week to find out the final half of our list, plus we'll have two additional honourable mentions. Any final thoughts from you, Paul?
No, just as always, thank you for listening in. Do have a good New Year's celebration. And as Dan said at the top of the pod, do let us know your top 10 shows as well, or your top 5, or even just your top show. halfmeasurespodcast.com or find us on your social media.
And look, I'm really interested, like, if you've got the same or even if you've got something completely different, because this is where the gold is found, my friends. But before we go, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Whiting King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady and Michael Chalmers. But until next week, everyone, adios.